Welcome to Speaking From Water, episode 51. We've had a little break over the summer, but today I'm so excited to have on one of the world's greatest surfing legends. He's also from Wrightsville Beach. He's a Wrightsville Beach native. He's taken the world by storm, surfing some of the world's largest recorded waves. If you come to Wrightsville Beach, you'll see him spinning 360s and just crushing the tiniest waves. He knows water, and I'm so excited to speak with him today about the water he knows best, the big, the small, and all the colors that the ocean provides. I'm here with Mason Barnes.
Good morning.
Guys, we're here at the Bevy Mart, and Mason, I'm super excited to start the podcast here at the Bevy Mart. Sure. Before we get into your water life, let's talk about the Bevy Mart and what the Bevy Mart is, what it means to you, how it was created, and maybe if you could give us a tour.
Yeah, so essentially Bevy Mart, it's been, I'd say it was a 6-year process from beginning to opening the doors. This was the gas station that I grew up going to as a kid. I would come here when I was, I'd say, 8 to 12 years old. I'd ride my bike up here, skateboard with my friends, and I'd get slushies and a Slim Jim. And it was just kind of like our little safe haven as kids. Our parents would let us come here because it's part of the neighborhood. We didn't have to cross the street. And it was just such a cool part of all of my friends and myself's childhood. And then it shut down for years. And I always wanted to bring it back to life. And kind of give something to the kids that live here now that I once had. And now we're here and we have pretty much what was here, the same footprint. We just brought new life to the existing structure that was here. And it's, I'd say it's different in a sense that we have a lot more healthier options. The goal here is to obviously be convenient, but promote health to the community because it's here and it's accessible. So like if you know you want a snack and you want to eat something that's good for you, pull right in, stop here, hang out, bring your kids, get a slushie, have a coffee. You know, we got a little bit of everything. We got things in here for all walks of life. So,
and we're on Harbor Island in Wrightsville Beach. This is where you grew up. Yep. Your childhood home is literally behind the shop. Exactly. We're going to take a stroll after you give us a tour of the Bevy Mart.
Yep.
You've done, I've watched maybe 3 years of production to this establishment. Can you tell me about the concrete on the outside and the motivation, the idea behind that? Because it's very striking. It's industrial.
Yeah. So in Wrightsville Beach, when you're renovating buildings, you have to apply by FEMA and flooding rules because obviously when we get smoked by hurricanes, this whole part of the island is underwater. And so what they don't want is liabilities with buildings being filled with water and things falling down and just being a hazard to the community. So generally what people do is they tear the building down and they put in a brand new building, but they lift it, I think it's 8 feet off the ground. And I did not want to do that at all. Like I love this town how it is. I think it's perfect right now. And I don't want to be tearing down cool pieces of Wrightsville Beach and putting something new because this has been here my whole life and for a lot of people's lives. And the last thing I want to do is tear it down. So I pretty much set out to do whatever I could in my will to keep the building here. And that's what took so long. And we came to the conclusion and a way to, you know, do that. And essentially what we did was we had to gut the entire building and redo like certain structures of the building so that it could be sealed from the outside. So what we have are these concrete pillars. And if you look closely, there are these bolts that go upside each pillar. So if a hurricane does come and there is going to be severe flooding, which it's going to happen, it's inevitable. We come in, we unscrew this, you put these logs in the entire, it pretty much seals each door, each window from the outside. So if water does come, it's sealed from the inside out pretty much.
That's incredible. Who thought of that?
Well, it was several architects and designers that helped us design that. And I always wanted the raw concrete look because I just love it. And it ended up working out in my favor that to achieve this floodproofing, we needed concrete and flat, smooth surfaces. So it was kind of a win-win for everyone. I got to keep the building I wanted. I got to make it look how I wanted. And it complies with all the rules and regulations in Rights of Beach. So it was a win-win for everyone. It took, the biggest hurdle was the time frame that it took, because it was a logistical nightmare to figure out and get everything to where it actually worked. But we stuck with our gut, we held our line, and now we're here and it looks beautiful. And you know, we still have this cool original building that was here when I was a kid. So it was worth every minute. I would, if I had to do it the same way again, I would, just to keep it as it is, because the last thing we want to do is tear down beautiful parts of our, you know, cool little beach town.
So. Well, let's give us a tour.
Of course, welcome in. What's up, guys? So here we are. We got our coffee bar. We have our incredible employees. Emma, she runs the show. Come down with any of these aisles, and we got healthy snacks, healthy cookies, pretty much everything you pretty need. It's the original plan was convenience, and now it's kind of turned into like a mini grocery store. So if you wanted, you could literally do your grocery shopping. But this is like a really good example of kind of where I sit as a business and my business model. It's like, we do have your classic Lay's chips that you would find in a 7-Eleven. We have your Dr. Pepper's Rockstar Celsius, but next to that, we have the healthier version. We got your Olipops, your healthier alternatives, and organic gluten-free chips instead of your like standard Lay's. So like, the deal, the dream is to have people go from picking these to picking these, because you know, these are gonna help you live longer. These are gonna make you overall healthier, happier, better human being, I think. Eating healthy is a full-time job. And nowadays there's so many good alternatives that taste just as good as the bad stuff. It's like, why not? So, pick your poison, whatever you want. We got it here for you.
And I see you're drinking coconut water. Yep. Out of all the drinks in the shop, you choose that. Tell me why you love coconut water so much.
So I've already had 3 cups of coffee this morning. I'm trying to get a little hydration in. I'm training right after this, and I can't eat before I go train or else I'll throw up. So this is like kind of like a source of some calories / hydration without having too much in my stomach to where I will like puke. Like I would love to eat a breakfast, eggs and bacon right now, but if I did that, it would not be a good idea.
So training is a big part of your life. Every day you train for the extreme things you do. You wake up in the morning, you have your coffee, you go to the coconut water, and you don't eat.
Yep.
So eating is a post-workout thing for you.
Exactly. And you know, eating is very important. But with the level of like where my workouts are right now, I try to get that done before I eat, because I've tested it. If I put something in my stomach before the cardio stuff, it just makes it come up every time. So I train, and then my reward after training is getting to eat whatever I want and as much as I want. And it's the best feeling ever, every single time.
So I have the same program, and I completely concur.
Exactly.
What are you going to be eating today?
After I train, I'll go to Lovey's. I've been eating a chicken and cheese quesadilla there for over 15 years. I get the exact same thing, and it's never changed. And I'm gonna go straight there, get my quesadilla. They make these baked French fries that, with coconut oil, and gosh, it's so good. And then usually I'll come in here after that, and I'll get a coffee and a protein shake and maybe one of these. Like I said, when I was a kid, I loved Slim Jims. This is the new age Slim Jim. I eat one of these every single day. I love them.
High in protein.
Yep, a lot of protein, and nothing bad in that thing. It's convenient and easy. And then my guilty pleasure is coffee. Like, that's, I don't drink alcohol. That's my thing is coffee. I look forward to it in the morning, but I drink them in the afternoons too. So like, I had one in here at 8 o'clock last night, and drank one and went right to bed after. So
it has little effect on you.
Yeah, no, the caffeine has no effect. It's more of just like a comfort thing. It's something that I do to like check out and not take life so seriously and just like enjoy my time. I like to be really focused and really disciplined and really strict on what I do when I'm doing these things like training and stuff. But then I've learned it's very important to turn off and have a normal, functional, fun, like enjoyable life as well, because that balance is really important.
Is there a particular coffee that you prefer, or a kind of flavor, the way you take it?
I drink a cortado with almond milk, and it's what it is. Is it's two shots of espresso with the exact same amount of milk. So it's small. It's about that big, and I just sip on that. It takes me like, it takes most people minutes to drink the thing because it's so tiny. But I sip on it and take my sweet time, and I just love it. I drink like four a day. So I'd say that I'd like to wean that down to three because it's a lot of caffeine. But for now, I just opened up. I finally have my own coffee shop, so I'm enjoying it. So
you come here, you have your unlimited supply. What supply of coffee do you take here at the shop?
So my partner, Cheeto, he started Bespoke Coffee Shop downtown. His specialty is coffee. He knows the business side of coffee. He's worked with his company, Black and White, even previously before we opened this, so he ran with his gut and got the same guys. They came in, they provided the coffee, the machines, everything. It's kind of like a one-stop shop, and the coffee is really good. It's like world-class coffee. I've had several people tell me it's some of the best coffee they've ever had, and I agree. So I try coffee everywhere I go, and it's nice to know that when I'm home in my small little beach town now, I can get like world-class coffee as well. So
where in the world does it come from?
It's from all over. I want to say they have bees from Africa, Brazil, all over the world. So, yeah.
So region really isn't as important as the flavor or the variety to you.
I'd say the most important thing is the person making it. And it's running one of those machines is not easy. It's a full skill set. And we got so lucky. We have our head barista, Emma, and she's world class on that machine. Like, she can pump out a perfect coffee every time, which is very hard to do. And she's been teaching everyone else to be on par with her. So we're lucky to have her doing that, and it's making a really big difference.
You're a world traveler. You've traveled the world. If you leave America, you will find that the barista is a very important job, and people go to university for the skill.
Yeah.
Were you inspired by that when you've done your traveling to see that, say, in Europe and want to bring it here?
Yeah, I noticed, you know, obviously there's so many coffee shops around town, but the hardest part for everyone is finding someone that knows really what they're doing. And my goal here was to A, have this convenience store, but also this completely separate business, which is the coffee shop side of things as well. And I wanted that to exceed everyone's expectations. I didn't want anything short of the best coffee in town. And luckily that's what we have. And, you know, Emma right here is pretty much running that show. And it's been incredible so far. And I've heard nothing but good things. And I haven't had a bad coffee yet. I've probably drank. We've been up for 2 weeks and I'm averaging like four a day. So
what kind of water do you source for your coffee?
We have a water filter under the machine. So the water comes straight through this filter, straight through the machine. Great water.
Like reverse osmosis?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the cool thing about that, is it's all hooked up straight to the source. And you're getting as good a quality stuff as you could possibly get your hands on. So,
can you tell us about your counter, your stools here? Very unique.
Yeah. The counter is kind of like the staple of the store. You walk in, it gets everyone's attention immediately. I originally went that direction with the counter because I love the look. I honestly built something that I would want in my home, essentially. It's very modern, it's very sweet. It just became kind of like the staple of the store. And then the diner stools are something that I picked out because I wanted to lighten the vibe up and really make this place feel like kid friendly and a very fun, light environment. And that's like, this just is like bringing me back to like diner vibes with my family, eating at Denny's or something. And that's why we got these poppy bright letters in here. It's like, you know, this place is beautiful and elegant. There's a lot of really nice modern things, but like, I put it here for kids, the community, to come in here and have fun and to make themselves at home, to grab slushies and spill it all over the place. And to, you know, I walked in here this morning, there's a slushie on the ground, and that's fine, that's what we want. Like, this kid's drinking slushies at 10 a.m. It's amazing. So,
And you've been open now 3 weeks? And
I think right over 2 weeks, so not even 3 weeks yet. So.
And every time I drive by, it's packed.
Yeah, it's been a huge success so far. I'm super grateful with like the feedback and what people have, you know, the reactions that I've been getting from the community have been amazing. And it's still, there's so many things to be added on still. So like we opened the doors and left room for growth. So like there's a lot of growth in the sense of the food that we have. We want to add some hot items, smoothies. There's numerous things that we want to add on that are going to, you know, just really fill this place in. It's a very like, it's cool to see this, how this place works, because like I can literally be like, oh, that's not working. That can go. Oh, that is working. Let's get double of it. Like I hired James Bain, who had Epic. He is pretty much running our whole food program, grab and go. He's making everything from scratch himself. And that has been like such a blessing in disguise that he was able to have the time to do that for us, because like his quality of food is the premise of my business. Like it's convenient and good for you at the same time. And I'm so lucky that he had the time to even just offer that to us. And it's been like an incredible, incredible part of the store. I'm so grateful that we have him. But like he's adding things onto the menu every week. So like we got chicken fingers this week, but they're like organic gluten-free chicken tenders made with coconut crispy stuff. And it's just an evolving thing. So yeah, just well, going with the flow.
Congratulations,
it one step at a time.
Man. You want to go on a stroll around your neighborhood,
yeah,
and you can tell us about the history?
Let's do it.
All right, Mason, we're on Harbor Island. This is where you grew up, and we're now on the outside of the Bevy Mart. We're going to go through the neighborhood, go on a stroll, and talk water.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's
do it. So, what your father, Reggie Barnes, is a famous world-class skateboarder. Before you came into his life, he was the man. He was Bones Brigade, did all the, pretty much brought skateboarding to the world in a modern sense. You come on the scene, does he want you to become a skateboarder? How does that go?
Yeah, he never forced anything on me, but obviously I was born with a skateboard in my lap pretty much. At a young age, literally from birth till probably 14, all I wanted to do was skate. And that wasn't because he forced me or anything. It was literally just a part of my life. It was like a part of my DNA, and I loved it. So that's literally all I did. And I still love skating. I just don't quite do it as much as I used to, because I fell in love surfing so much more, and I got to be careful about little injuries and things. But skating's been a part of my life. It's helped shape who I am as a person, and it's, you know, I am a professional surfer, but skating has helped me become a professional surfer in so many different ways. So
well, one of the things I find so striking about your surfing here in Wrightsville Beach, you'll roll up at Crystal Pier and it's knee to waist high, and your ability to ride the surfboard like a skateboard, as far as the turns, the 360s, all the high energy maneuvers, did that come first before your big wave life?
Yeah, so I learned to surf here in Wrightsville Beach, and that's where I fell in love with the sport. It all started here. And that first sense of like thrill and excitement with the sport was trying airs and maneuvers and getting inspired from guys like Slater and Benny B and guys that surf small waves and do all these tricks and maneuvers. And the big wave stuff came later in life. It was a stepping stone towards that, but the beginning of it was all here, all doing that. So like, that's my core. When I'm home, all I want to do is surf small waves and try airs. I'm 30 years old now, and I still love learning tricks and maneuvers just as much as I ever did. Even though the big wave stuff is like definitely my favorite thing and my purpose, I still get more amped to go surf waist high south end with good air wind than I do anything else. So
you mentioned Ben Bourgeois before we started this conversation. You were lining up a workout for him after the podcast. You know, you're great friends with him. When you were a young kid, he had to be like at the top of his career. Was he a big influence on you?
100%. He's like definitely one of the greatest athletes to ever come out of this town. And he still is to this day. Like, I swear if he wanted to, he could qualify again right now. He's surfing better than he ever has in his entire life. But just to see someone from here succeed like he did, he qualified for the world tour and competed at a top level of our sport for so many years against the best guys on the planet. That did a lot for a lot of people. I mean, he just showed that it's possible. It doesn't matter that we're from North Carolina and the waves are 2 feet every day. It's there. All you gotta do is want it and make it happen. So,
Ben came on the podcast back in November, and we spoke a lot about his days competing in competition. Was that ever a part of your surfing career? And tell us about that and how you view surfing as a competitive sport.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a competitive person. I love competing. There's still like no better feeling than winning. I'd say I'm at a point in my life where that's not why I surf, to win. But that being said, you know, with what I do comes contests, and obviously when you're in those, the goal is to win. I've kind of taken a different perspective on everything, especially with big waves. In a sense, it's just, there's so much more on the line with big waves. When you're competing, you can't force anything to happen. It's not like you're going out and trying to get a six and do an air reverse. It's all in, you know, the ocean's hands at that point. If she wants to give you the wave, she's going to. So I have a different perspective on all of that now. Essentially, like, I love the sport. I have more respect for the ocean than I ever have in my entire life. I do what I personally think needs to be done to reach these certain goals. And then if the ocean wants to, you know, return some love in that favor, then she can. And if she doesn't, then there's nothing I can do about that. And that's just, you know, what was meant to be. And that being said, like, if there's a heat or a contest or something, it's out of my control. I put in my work beforehand and let the rest during those days follow. So,
do you remember your first waves in Wrightsville Beach, or what wave?
I do remember my first waves in Wrightsville Beach. Well, the earliest, I mean, I was surfing when I was 2 years old.
Yeah.
But some of the earliest memories I have are getting on a bike with my dad and riding across the bridge and going to C Street. That's kind of where I grew up surfing. That was the closest beach to my house. It's still, like, to this day, every time I go there, it has such like a nostalgic feel, because that's literally where it all started for me. Has a special place in my heart. I remember landing my first air reverse there. I remember getting barreled for the first time there. So many things happened at C Street. And it has a very, very, you know, special place in my heart. And I went down there yesterday, rode my bike to check the waves, and it was just like every time it feels just like I'm a kid again. It's like, hopefully that'll never change.
Who were the people of that time in Wrightsville Beach that you really looked up to? We spoke about Ben Bourgeois. Can you name drop anyone else?
Yeah, there's a handful of guys. Mark Yonkers, Matt Gilligan, Richard Gilligan, Rob Brown. There's so many talented people that came from this town before me, and they really paved the way. It's like a whole another generation of surfing. Jonathan Mencher, Nick Bland, those are all like kid guys that are, you know, they're older brothers to my best friends. So they're just always around, always kind of, we were just kind of following in their footsteps. They really did like help pave the way for everything that I am today, without even knowing that they've done that. I had so much respect for all those guys, and I still do. And they're also so good at such a young age. It's pretty funny, like when I was a kid, everyone was sponsored, and I was where I was always like the last kid to get sponsored, always. But I always like looked up to all these guys, like that had all these stickers on my board, and I'm just like, that's what I want. And they're still doing it. I still surf with them every single day, and that's the cool thing about our sport. It's like if you love it that much and it's a part of your life, that'll never leave. And you know, I'll go surf C Street on a random day and see every single one of those guys I just named in the water, and it's just like nothing's changed 20 years later. So,
well, I remember vividly, I was shooting pipe and I was on the beach, and it was had to be 2007 maybe, and I walk out and I see Mark Yonkers there, Rob Brown, mm-hmm. and you're there with them. Okay. And I'm like, oh my God, Mason and is out here surfing pipe. It had to be 10-foot pipe. It was mm-hmm. gnarly. Mm-hmm. Like, I was scared to swim in the channel.
Yep.
How old do you think you were at that time?
There's no telling. I remember I surfed pipe for the first time when I was probably 11 or 12.
You look like you're 11 or 12. Yeah. And I was literally shocked to see you coming out of the water.
And those guys really did, like, in a sense, in heavier water, push me a lot, because they were always known for charging. They were always known for doing crazy things and being in the heaviest waves in the world. And I looked up to that, and they kind of just almost showed me how it was done. And you know, they were like, it's there if you want it, and if you want to come out, we'll take you with us and we'll look after you. And they did that a couple times, and that was like the real beginning of like my big wave, like, love and passion for the sport. And yeah, it all started with seeing those guys do crazy stuff. So
was pipe well, can you tell us about your first sessions at pipe? And how, because pipe is one of those places that some of the best people in the world can go and they just get handed. How long did it take you to really get into it? And what were those first sessions like at Pipeline for you?
Yeah, I mean, every time I paddle off the pipe, you learn something new. I have so much respect for that wave. It's so scary, it's so gnarly, and it's so beautiful all at the same time. And the people that have not mastered it, but you know, became a part of that wave and done so much out there, I have so much respect for. And I still to this day haven't gotten the wave I want out there. And it's like something, like, even if I do get the wave that I want, I'm always gonna want something more out there. And there's just like an unconditional love and respect for that place that'll never disappear, because it's so gnarly, and you never truly will like master it or figure it out, and that fear will always be there. But that was like my first sense of like fear surfing, was paddling out there, seeing the reef. I'd say it was only like 4 to 6 foot when I paddled out there for the first time, but I was terrified. And that feeling was like what really hooked me. It was like, okay, I did that and I'm okay, like, let's try that again, and then again and again and again and again. And then before you know it, like, you're just constantly looking for more.
Did you make your first wave?
Yes, but definitely wasn't a barrel or anything crazy. So, like, I was literally, I remember my first session out there, actually. I don't even know if he would know this, but I went on this one wave. It was maybe, like, my third or fourth wave, and I ate it. But it was a bigger wave for the day. And Mikey Bruno came up to me after and was like, that was so sick. And I've never even told him this. I need to bring it up. But, like, that stuck with me. So I was probably 10 years old, and Mikey came up to me and just told me that was so sick. He just charged that wave. And that, like, I'll never forget that moment until the day I die. It was a really cool, really cool turning point to just, like, beat a heavy wave and get acknowledgement from someone that's so gnarly and has so much respect. That really stuck with me. So.
And you then started just going to Hawaii every winter. That was that the program?
Yeah. Hawaii, like, has indirectly became like my second home. I love that place so much. Some of my best friends live there, and it has such a special place in my heart. My dad bought a house there when I was probably like 15 or 16, and that made me fall even more in love with the place, because I was able to spend more time there and just really made it feel like home. It's such a special, special place, and there's such like a spiritual feeling when you're there. There's so much energy. It's something I can't even put into words. Every time I pull up into my driveway there, I get goosebumps. It's just like, it's an incredible place. And it's helped shape who I am as a person today. It's like, is, you know, putting fear in my eyes, teach me how to be respectful to people, because if you don't, you're gonna get slapped. It's like, it's things like that, that place is really unique for, because you don't get that everywhere in this world. And it's really helped shape who I am today, and like, just gives me such a nice perspective on life.
Can you dial down a little bit more onto that? Because Hawaii, from afar, to those who don't visit, they think it's very postcardy. It's something that they don't really know about. But you get to the island and it is raw. The people are raw. But if you come with respect, as you say, the doors open up and the joy floods in. Tell us about your little bit more about your the fear factor and the love factor of the island.
Yeah, so, I mean, the ocean alone there speaks for itself. It's a head-high wave there is so much different than a head-high wave here. It's just so much raw power and energy. And it's just, it's always a learning curve there. There's always something new. You're never comfortable, ever, in the ocean. No matter how perfect or beautiful it is, it's always intimidating, which I love about that place. And it's cool to have so much respect for something, because it really puts you in your place and reminds you, like, you're just this small little grain of sand on this giant planet. And it's really easy to get comfortable, and that place will quickly remind you who you are and where you stand.
Well, I've seen in the past couple years some amazing outer reef photos of you. And can you break down your kind of, you don't have to say the spots, but those outer reef spots, how you got to the point where you were comfortable getting out there. Maybe you're still not comfortable out there, but what is it about the outer reefs on the North Shore that speaks to you most?
Yeah, so the outer reefs on Oahu were my first big waves that I ever surfed, ever. Garrett McNamara is a really close friend of my dad's, and he took me and him tow windsurfing for the first time when I was probably like 13, around that same time when I surfed pipe. And it was big. It was, you know, 20, 30 foot faces and a lot of energy. We're far in the middle of the ocean. And I just remember clicking in that day and like feeling something that I'd never felt before. And I think even Garrett noticed it as well. Like, I wasn't comfortable, but I was confident, and he could see how much that I enjoyed that perspective on surfing opposed to, you know, being out at Rockies or something else. And from that day on, you know, I became so fascinated with those outer reefs. There's such incredible world-class big waves, and they're there. So it's like, they're predominantly good paddle waves. So like that, towing that day really opened the door for me, like wanting to go out there and catch a giant wave. After that tow day, I got a board made from Adam Morton, AJW. He shaped me a 9-0. And then I think like that very next season, Mark and Rob took me out to one of the outer reefs, and I got like what I thought was a giant wave at the time. Looking back at it, probably wasn't that big, but I just remember seeing it and I was like, oh my God, that was insane. And actually, I got smoked. I went straight and got blown up all the way to the beach, broke my leash. But I just remember what that feeling that I felt as a kid. I felt more accomplished getting blown up on a 30-foot wave than I ever did from winning an event or anything. And that really stuck with me. And I think that said a lot to me as like who I am as a person and what I want out of the sport. I really just thoroughly enjoyed that connection with the ocean more than anything else. And it's still like to this day a huge focus of mine is surfing those waves. I got one of the best waves of my entire life out there in 2022, and it was really like interesting pinnacle, like turning point in my life. It was such a special wave at such a special wave, a place that I've been surfing for 10 years and just getting smoked and denied and thrown all over. And then it's literally like the waves weren't even supposed to be that good, but the ocean just had this thing pop up right in front of me, and I was like, It was like all the stars aligned. I didn't have a filmer, and somehow my safety pulled out his iPhone and got like the most perfect iPhone clip you could possibly get of the wave. And it was just like so many factors kind of fell in place that day. I was like, wow, like Hawaii really gifted me something special today. She was, you know, yeah, it was like all my time and effort that I put into this place, she rewarded me with something special, and it was worth every single moment. And like, I still feel that wave every, I think about that wave every day.
And,
like,
and this was a paddle wave.
This was a paddle wave, yeah.
And can you describe for us the feeling of seeing the wall come?
Yep.
And a lot of people, the first reaction is paddle to the horizon.
Yep.
And you can't do that, right?
No, so like, I'll backtrack a little bit. When I started getting more into surfing big waves, I met Twiggy. He became one of my best friends, a mentor, a brother. Big wave surfing isn't like, it's not something you can just go do. You need the right equipment, you need the right people, you need to know when and where to do it. It's a logistical nightmare, just starting from scratch. And Twiggy really helped kind of just put everything on a plate for me and said, here you go, if you want it, it's here. I got boards, leashes, wetsuits, inflation vest. You come with me and, you know, I'll look after you and the rest is in your hands. And that meant so much to me because he's like still one of the best on the planet. And he really just provided a platform for me to like get to experience big waves more than most people. And for years we were out at Outer Reefs, every single little swell they broke, onshore, offshore, like bad direction, good direction, it didn't matter. And I feel like years and years of those sessions led to that one wave. And when that wave popped up, it was me and two other guys in the water, and Twiggy was one of them, and he was sitting right next to me, and he was screaming at the top of his lungs, like, go! And I didn't even look at the wave. I just heard Twig, and I just turned and blacked out, and just, it went. And I remember after the wave, I came up, it was like screaming, splashing water. He thought I was injured because I was screaming so loud at the top of my lungs, but it was just like uncontrollable joy. I didn't even know what to do with my hands. I was like, I was just speechless. And then 5 minutes later, my safety, Colin, who's also a North Shore lifeguard, pulls out his iPhone because he's like, I think I filmed it. And he pulls it up and it was like the most perfect, crispy iPhone clip you could ever. No water droplets, no waves in the foreground. And I was like, I had no idea the wave looked like that. And it was just such a, you know, we don't do it to get video and, but it's just so much more rewarding when you get to see it.
Because 100%.
It's, you don't understand what's going on when you're on these waves. Like, I fully black out. Like, I don't remember a thing. But then to see it after, it really makes sense why you feel that way. And it's just like, it's a really rewarding feeling seeing it. And I'm so grateful that he was A, running safety that day, and B, got the clip, because it made such a big difference. And also having Twiggy there, like, after years and years and years of surfing Outer Reefs with him screaming at me to go on this wave at such a special wave, it just meant the world to me. And it's moments like that that is like, you know, that's not a contest, but in my eyes, that's like a world title, that wave to me. It's priceless. You can't put a trophy or a price tag next to something like that.
Do you remember the color of the water?
Oh yeah, it was crystal blue. It was like, that wave in particular was so clean and so blue. It was such a perfect wave. I literally, I couldn't believe it when I was in the barrel going down the line of this wave, how perfect it was. I was able to, like, I was dragging my hands, and then I got a big pump, and then I went over the foam ball. It spit. It was just like time was moving in slow motion on this wave, and it was a feeling that, hi, how are you?
And let's contrast this with some cold water.
Yep.
I've heard you say before that Mavericks is your scariest wave on the planet.
Yep.
Tell us why and also speak about this underwater waterfall that exists in this place, because a lot of people might not understand the concept behind an underwater waterfall.
So Mavericks is definitely, you know, top three heaviest waves on the planet. I have so much respect for that wave. It scares the heck out of me. There's just so many factors that come into play out there. I've had my worst wipeout of my life there, and that's kind of where all the fear comes from. I got caught inside there and pushed. I actually smacked the bottom. It's really deep out there. That's not easy to do. And I was underwater for a very long time. I've never like felt that close to just blacking out underwater, which is obviously worst case scenario. And I actually did black out for a second from impact immediately, but then I woke up underwater and kind of came back to it, was able to pull my vest. And after inflating my vest, I just went straight to the bottom. So that's how like, that's how powerful that place is. These vests and stuff are put there to save our lives, and they do so, they help so much. But there's a fine line of like when they won't do anything at all. And this wave was like a prime example of it. And that fear behind that experience, it just sits in my head. And I'll never forget it. And it wasn't even that big of a wave compared to what, you know, other bad situations I've been in. I've fallen on way bigger waves and they weren't nearly as violent and brutal as this one. But it's a really unique place because it comes from such deep water and breaks on a shallow shelf, but then it goes into extremely deep water again. So what happens is if you fall in this certain area, like kind of right where the lip hands the water, hits the water, it's infamous for pushing people really deep. There's almost like a constant current of water going downwards, which is really unique because you don't have that really anywhere else. A lot of waves, they hit the shallow shelf, and then it stays shallow. So like, you'll just get dragged. But with Mavericks, it hits the shallow shelf and then it goes, I wanna say like 40, 50 feet straight down. So a lot of people, when you fall in that spot, you get pushed really, 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 really deep. And everyone that surfs out there knows that. It's in the back of our heads. And it's just, it's infamous for giving people the most brutal wipeouts of their entire life. And it's given me that reward, and I've been back a couple of times since then and had some nice waves since then, but it's still just like a constant fear that will never disappear, and like just a underlying amount of respect for a wave that I don't have for, I mean, I have that for everywhere else, but there more than anywhere, because I just know how gnarly and violent it can be.
How do you decide between paddling and towing?
There's a fine line. It's like, obviously we nowadays want to paddle the biggest waves you can possibly paddle. There is a line to where it's probably not possible. So a lot of times wind is a factor. If it's super choppy and bumpy and but giant, we still want to surf. You can't really paddle because these boards are too light and you'll get bumped off. So like this, and then size is also a factor. Like if it's 80 feet, you're not paddling. I don't care who you are.
And that's a place like Nazare.
Yeah, and that's like, the ocean changes so much from 50 feet to 80 feet. It clicks into a whole nother sport pretty much. And the way the water moves, the amount of bump that comes up the face, it's like, you think 50 feet is giant until you see 80 feet, and you don't even notice what 80 foot wave is doing until you're out there feeling it. And it's not even the wave, it's everything that's going on around the wave, the current that's going past the wave, the current that's going up the face, the bump, the side wave. It's just like, it's something that can't be explained unless you're there and feel it in person, because you can't even really see it in video. Like that amount of energy is not captured, you can't understand it. But like, it's not physically possible to paddle on those days because of those factors. So like, they're two different sports essentially, because they're done on two different, completely playing fields. And obviously there's a part of me that wants to push paddling and catch even bigger and bigger waves, and there's still so much room to be done there, but there's always going to be that line that's drawn that's like, okay, today's a tow day, not paddle.
So what do you find more rewarding, more stoked? What do you like more?
There's no better, you know, I don't find a paddle wave necessarily more rewarding than a giant tow wave. I've had equal amount of joy and satisfaction from tow waves as I've had from paddle waves. Tow waves in particular have changed my life drastically from a career standpoint. Obviously when you're on a wave of a tow wave, it's something that like the average person can appreciate more because they're so big and they're so tall, and it's like people see that and they immediately understand, okay, that's crazy. But like, for instance, like last winter, this wave I got in Ireland, it was a paddle wave. It was one of the best waves of my entire life. But like your average Joe walking down the street in New York might not understand the difficulty to catch that and to ride that.
Let me hold on right there. Yeah. This average Joe over here, when I saw that picture of you at Mulgamore you're speaking about.
Yeah.
I've seen you, you know, at Nazare, and the average Joe, you would say that got you really famous. Your Nazare wave,
yeah.
Your 100-foot wave. When I saw your wave in Mulgamore last winter, my head exploded. Mm-hmm. I immediately got the guy who shot the photo on the podcast, and we spoke about it. Mr. Salmon, his name is, and it was amazing. The thickness, the slab. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the dichotomy between the two spots.
Yeah, well, that being said, first of all, for him to be in that spot to get that video is just, people don't understand how gnarly that is. Like, that's just as gnarly as me riding the wave. He's in the barrel with me on this, the most scary heavy wave in the world. It's like, these guys don't get enough credit. It's like, I wish they could win like big wave awards because they deserve them.
Key and Salmon.
Yeah. Beast.
Beast.
I also did not think that I had a clip of that wave. It was so late in the session. Everyone had already went in because the wind was basically like 30 knots straight on shore at this point. And somehow I just was like, I'm just going to sit out here and see what happens. And that wave popped up, and thank God he was still out there, because like, obviously the wave has a special place in my heart no matter what, but like I said before, just to see a video of it makes it that
well,
much
you're
better.
A pro and you got to get the content.
Yeah,
your sponsors.
There is like a work aspect to it as well. Like, that was a incredible life-changing wave for me, and that's part of my job is getting me these waves. So yeah, but very thankful that he was here.
Can you break down that moment for us play by play?
Yeah.
Like, talk about the spot. Talk about the whole thing.
The whole situation, actually, how that all came to be was really interesting. I was in Europe for a contest in the Canary Islands. I was with my mom and my sister. We were on a flight. We had just landed in Madrid from the Canary Islands, and I was taking them to Nazaré just to show them Nazaré because it has such a special place in my heart. They had never been there. I wanted to show it to them. And we're in Madrid, and I get a text from Tim Beniathan, who's a filmer. And he's like, yeah, I'm in Ireland. I'm like, what are you doing in Ireland? He's like, Mulgamore is going to be really good tomorrow. And I'm like, what? And that's like been my dream wave forever. I've always wanted to score, and it's so hard to score. And I look at flights when we're in the Madrid airport. I can the flight that we're on from Madrid to Lisbon, and my mom and sister are immediately on like a surf mission. Like, so we fly from Madrid to Dublin. We landed in the middle of the night. I rent a car. Have no idea where I am, what I'm doing. I was in the Canaries a couple days before that and met a couple really amazing local Irish people. I reached out to them because they were the only people I knew there, and they were just super nice, genuine people. I was like, do you have boards or anything? And one of them was like, yeah, I got one board at my dad's house. You can go grab it. Like, thank God he had that. And things just started falling in line. Like, I got the board. Then I reached out to Will Scuden because I know he has a lot of friends there, and he put me in touch with Dylan Stott because I wanted to do it the right way. I didn't want to just paddle out there for my first time, not have safety, and just be like a liability to everyone. So I hired him, he took me out there, showed me the ropes, and was just like, he made the experience so more organized and chaotic, which what it was turning into. So we get out there, it's my 30th birthday on top of that, and there's so many crazy waves going down. Like, I just remember sitting there looking at these waves and being like, this is insane. Like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever been a part of, and I haven't even ridden a wave yet. And the local boys are just getting the craziest rides, and I didn't want to like jump in the peak and be like,
we're talking Garoge McCade.
Yep.
And
he's the one who gave me the board.
Yep.
I cannot thank him enough.
He was on the podcast
doing
recently.
That. Yep. He's such a incredible human. Like, I had just met him a week before, and he's like, go grab my board from my dad's house. Like, they were just such welcoming people. It reminded me of like people here in North Carolina. Because if he ever came here, we would do the exact same thing for him. So these Irish guys like were so hospitable, you know, opened their homes to me and my family, and helped me put myself in that situation to be there if a wave does present itself. But long story short, those guys had a crazy 4 hours. I still hadn't even ridden a wave because I just wanted to watch. It was like, this is my first time here. I'm not gonna go sit at the top and try to get a bomb. They all went in because the wind went onshore, and I sat there for like another 45 minutes, and there was just me and maybe three other guys out at this point in time.
Maybe Zach Haynes, was he there?
I think he was still out. He might have even gone in. I want to say like everyone that I was familiar with went in. Everyone. There was two or three guys out still.
And Sam was still shooting.
And yeah, he was luckily still in the water shooting, and I still didn't have any idea. And sure enough, this giant set came, and at this point I had a choice of any wave I wanted because there was no one in the water. And this thing had the crazy, Dylan earlier that morning told me, you want a wave that's going, like has a, that looks like it's swinging into the channel. And this thing had the biggest black wall swinging into the channel. I was like, oh my God. And I don't even remember from that point on. I remember seeing that black wall, and then I just blacked out and go. And it ended up being one of the most like exciting, crazy rides of my life. That was my first time really ever surfing a slab, like ever. That was my first wave. I got picked up from Dylan on the inside. I had no idea what had just happened. And he pretty much gave me a big hug and told me happy birthday. And I was like, that's the greatest 30th birthday present I could ever ask for. Later that night, I still didn't know there was a video of the wave. There was a photo, and it was kind of out of focus and was incredible. I was super grateful for the photo. But then later that night, I get a message, and it was the clip. And I remember being like, oh my God. I was sitting at a Thai restaurant with my mom and sister and just went silent. And they're like, is everything okay? And I'm like, yes.
Best birthday present ever.
Yes. And I showed them the clip, and I mean, they were, I came in earlier, like after that session, I was like, did you guys see my wave? And they're like, yeah, that was cool. I'm like, that was cool? Like, what do you mean that was cool? Like, that was one of the craziest waves of my life. And you were actually saw it in person. But it's just so hard for like people to understand, like from the beach, it's a really far out there and you can't really tell what's going on.
Okay. The slab, break it down. Why is the slab so gnarly?
The slab is so gnarly because like the dream of any surfer is getting barreled. That's the mecca of surfing. And the unique thing about Mulligmore is you can catch these barrels with your own arms that you usually couldn't catch anywhere else. The wave gives you this entry point into this giant barreling wave that like, say if this size wave was at Chopu, you might not be able to catch it. You would need a jet ski or something. So that makes it like extra unique because it gives you this entry into these giant XXL barrels. And that's what makes that place so unique. And it's also a left. I'm a goofy foot, and that's what really, really gets my attention too. And it's just such like a raw, special, beautiful place. like I said before, the people, they speak for themselves. Like, they're the most hospitable, nice, like, genuine, down-to-earth people ever. And it's because of where they came from. They come from such, like, a powerful, beautiful place. It just, like, it creates respectful, good humans. And that's what that place is. And just, like, it was a lot of things, a lot of stars aligning to make that wave happen. And I owe it all to the local community for literally providing the means to even put myself in the lineup that day, because without them, I literally wouldn't have been able to be in the water. And they made that happen. And then the ocean kind of gave me the rest. And I'm just forever grateful for those little moments that I get to experience. And it's not even the wave. It's just like I said, it was like having the people, my mom there, my sister, that was there first time really, like, traveling the world. They get to watch me do what I love. They get to see how they always just see me doing these crazy things. They don't understand the community behind it as well. And for them to see that firsthand, like, how professional guys like Dylan are at safety. They're out there to literally keep me safe and make sure I come home in one piece. And I think that actually made my mom feel a lot better after seeing, like, how professional these guys are. They're just as good at what they do as I am at what I do. It's a completely different skill set in itself. And that was just like a...
5 minutes?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's do one little quick... We'll back in that.
Yeah.
All right. So, do you see yourself hunting more slab giant waves now from that experience? Or do you... You know, you're famous in Nazarite. Just to back up a little bit,
yeah.
You have one of the largest waves on record from the world total and at Nazarite. Are you going to post up more at places like that or at slab spots?
Yeah, I will say, like, Nazarite is forever, like, my baby. Like, that wave has changed me as a person from my surf career. It is literally... opened so many doors for me. It's beat me so brutally and it's given me so much. And I still want to spend most of my time there, but I'm just kind of going with the flow. Like, if Hawaii is going to be good, I'm going to go there. If Nazareth is going to be good, I'm going to go there. This is actually my first season where I have a full-time team. Usually I just show up the night before and kind of like wing it and like try to get a driver and a ski and all this equipment. But I've invested a lot of money that I've been making into the best drivers, the best equipment, which is something priceless. Eric Rebier, who is known to be one of the best drivers on the planet in Nazareth, has given me the opportunity to drive for me next season, which is priceless. Having someone like him with his knowledge, his skill set out there is just like, it's really something you can't put a price on, because it's such a unique place. It's not like, I don't care who you are or where you've driven a jet ski, it doesn't correlate to driving out there and finding good waves. And he is the best in the world. And I'm working with him full time there now. So I'm gonna be spending a lot of time in Nazareth this season. And yeah, I'm just gonna take it as it comes. I mean, maybe there's some swells, maybe there's not. Regardless, like, I love that place. With waves or without waves, it has, you know, the same feeling I get when I go to Hawaii and I get like chicken skin, I get when I pull into Nazareth. It just has such a special place in my heart. The people, the food, it all means so much to me. And that's because of just what that place has done for me. It's literally changed my life. And I'll be there. So it just kind of depends though.
One of the really cool parts of your life is your crossover into modeling,
yep.
And style.
Yep.
Tell us how those doors opened and what it is about style that really gravitates so much to you.
We can circle back. Yeah, so...
Dang.
I was lucky. That was lucky. That would have been bad if that was you. You know, I've always enjoyed the fashion world. I've always enjoyed, you know, dressing outside the box and doing things that are different than most people.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. I remember Mason, age 14, at the new Annex, a Cheeto shop as well. And Mason's there sandpapering a leather jacket. And he had all these different vintage clothes he was selling out the back. And it really struck me. So with that said, Mason, go on.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually funny. A lot of people don't know that about me. I've been into the fashion world, and just that, it's always been a hobby of mine for years now, from a very young age. And I've always had this fascination of mixing the fashion industry and surfing. And my dream has always been to work with major, like, high-end fashion brands and have them represent what I do in the surf industry, because like there's something there. I always saw opportunity, and I've for years and years and years I was always working towards this, you know, goal. I was just surfing and surfing and surfing, but that was always in the back of my head. And then after this one wave in Nazareth, all of that kind of changed, and those doors just started opening up. And I think it was just the perfect timing of everything. That wave happened. I met a handful of people in the industry. This creative director, Jonathan Anderson, reached out to me and pretty much gave me an opportunity that I'll be thankful for the rest of my life. He's a creative director for this brand, Loewe, which I've always had so much respect for. I love the clothes. I love everything they represent in that world. And he invited me to come do a job with them and meet the whole crew and be a part of their family. And I, you know, obviously without hesitation said yes. And that was just such a unique opportunity to meet him in person, to work with their team, and to do something that I've literally been trying to do for years and years and years. And it all kind of came into one place after this wave in Nazareth. And I'm forever grateful for him, you know, opening that door and giving me that opportunity. And I have so much respect for him as an artist and a person. And yeah, after that, just, you know, I like now just to focus on surfing and training and family and let the rest follow. So,
with that said, what are your current goals for the next 6 months? What's on the docket?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm training as hard as I've ever trained in my entire life right now. I'm preparing for this upcoming season. Like I said, I've invested a lot of money into time into having this driver, Eric Nazare. So I want to be there for every swell and not just like the one major one. I want to be there training and driving and just surfing and being part of the community instead of just showing up, surfing the giant day and leaving. And I want to win the Nazare event, and I want to win the Eddie. And those are my two goals. So that's the direction I'm moving towards. And yeah, we'll just see what happens.
Love it. And guys, we're going to wrap it up now. Mason is off to training. He has an appointment with Ben Bourgeois. What are you guys going to do today?
We are going to throw up. I'm going to get on my salt bike. We're going to do, usually takes us about an hour and a half. It'll be a circuit with high intensity cardio blasts in between each thing, which pretty much makes the entire exercise painful. I treat it more as like a mental exercise than anything. I like getting as uncomfortable as possible and trying to stay comfortable and just finish. I think that translates to what I do really nicely, because the premise of what I do is staying comfortable in uncomfortable situations. So that's kind of how I treat these workouts. It's like feeling pain and dealing with it, opposed to like going in there and trying to build muscle. So I dread it every day. Like, I know I'm about to go hurt for an hour and a half, and I'm not looking forward to it, but it feels really good afterwards. And I know it's like, it's just part of the process. So
you do heart rate?
I don't measure it, but I'm assuming it's up there. It'll go above 200. It's got to.
I was looking at your watch to see if it measured it. Tell us about your watch sponsor here.
This is Breitling. They're one of the other companies in that world of luxury and fashion I was talking about. It's been a dream of mine for years to work with a company like this. You know, they make the best watches on the planet, and to get to wear this while I surf is an honor, and super thankful I get to represent their brand. So.
And do you have any other sponsors you like to shout out?
Ruka, they've supported me for years now. they're the perfect balance of who I am as a person between, you know, surf and sport and training. I love working with these guys. They support everything I do. And they have such an incredible team and are doing incredible things. And it's just like a constant growing process for them, which is really cool. I love working alongside a brand that I can grow with, and that's exactly what I'm doing. And yeah, I've been riding Channel Island surfboards for years now. Britt Merrick is shaping all my boards this season for Nasgray, which I'm really excited about. I have so much faith in him as a person and a shaper to make me the best equipment in the world, and I'm sure he's going to. And then I've also been working with Tommy Hilfiger as well. Yeah, just keeping it going as much as I can. And I like to keep it simple, chop wood, carry water. Easy ways to live by. So, yeah.
Shouts out to your mom, Kelly Barnes.
Kelly Barnes runs my life. I literally wouldn't be able to do anything without her. So I'm only Mason Barnes because of Kelly Barnes. So without Kelly Barnes, there is no Mason Barnes. So thank you to her for literally everything. Because I would not be a functional human without her by my side.
Epic. Folks, Mason, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes,
you're always been at the top of my list of legends.
I'm glad we
and came. This has been a long time coming. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
Folks, that's episode 51 of Speaking from Water. We'll check you next time. Stay wet.